The House will come to order. The flag salute will be led by Representative Brian Clem from Salem.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing. Our opening ceremony will be presented by Judy Trokimoinen from Baker City, guest of Representative Cliff Bentz.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose red stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, for the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the
very much, Judy. Courtesies. Representative Bentz.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I direct your attention to the eastern or northern aisle. I'd like to introduce Judy Trokimoinen. She is an elementary music specialist at South Baker Elementary in Baker City, where she taught for 20 years. She is a National Board Certified Teacher, Early Middle Childhood Music, and a longtime member of the National Association of Music Education. Judy would like us to know that in 2004, Harris Poles conducted a survey, and it was discovered that 2 of 3 Americans did not know the words to the national anthem. Her association launched the National Anthem Project to remedy the problem. Teachers and students from across the nation began to sing the national anthem, culminating in a performance in Washington, D.C. on June 13, 2008, that included young singers from many states. Colleagues, please extend courtesies to Judy for singing so beautifully for us this morning.
We will now recognize for our moment in Oregon history, Representative Jefferson Smith.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for acknowledging me. The talented staff communicated with my talented staff that on this desk would be something to read for the History Day today, and if that could be made to happen, that would be marvelous. I got the winning ticket right here. This sesquicentennial history minute is from the Oregon Encyclopedia, a statewide project supported by Portland State University, the Oregon Historical Society, and the Oregon Council of Teachers of English, with generous support from the Oregon Cultural Trust. This history minute is from an entry written by Daryl Milner. Captain William Clark Slave, York, was a critical member of the Lewis and Clark expedition. His parents were owned by William Clark's father, and as a child, York was the companion and later manservant to the young Clark. On the expedition to the Pacific Ocean in 1804 to 1806, York's contributions included hunting, medical services, physical labor, and special exploratory activities. He was valuable in the expedition's diplomatic interactions with the native peoples, the Corps of Discovery encountered, who were curious and impressed by him. After the end of the expedition, accounts tell of York becoming increasingly bitter and resentful that has returned to traditional slave status. In response, according to letters, Clark wrote his older brother, the captain at various times, trounced York, had him jailed, and hired him out to serve his master to the severe point to break his spirit. It was not until approximately 10 years after the expedition's return to St. Louis that Clark granted York his freedom. Clark claimed that York grew to hate his freedom and died in Tennessee while trying to return to his old master. Another version of York's later life, based on a description by a mountain man in the 1830s, has York living out an honored life as a Crow Indian chief in the West. Mr. Speaker and colleagues, in this state, which has both a marvelous and, like the rest of our country, a checkered history, and in this, the Black History Month, with our first African-American president, I thank you for the time and thank you for the recognition.
Thank you, Representative. Nice recovery. For the courtesies, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to extend two courtesies, if I might. One for Guadalupe Rios, who is working as a page today. She's a student at Leslie Middle School, and she is interested in cooking and art. Someday she hopes to become an archaeologist, which is an interesting hobby for us, or occupation for her. Second one, I wanted to extend courtesies to my friend here moving across the floor. For a long time, I thought Dan Rafferty, also known as Grizzly Adams, was serving with us, and I just wanted to extend courtesies to Representative Mike Schaffler, who's joined us this session. Thank you.
Further courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please welcome to the chamber today a couple of pages from Staten Middle School, honorary pages. Please, Daniel Hudson, if you'd stand. Thank you. And Colton Himmelsbach. And both of these young men are quite talented and aspire to be authors. Thank you.
Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to welcome today honorary page Marley McBride. Marley, if you'd like to stand for us. Marley is an eighth grader at Leslie Middle School, loves volleyball, and is going to follow my daughter's heart because she wants to be an elementary school teacher someday. Welcome.
Further courtesies, Representative Thompson.
Colleagues, I'd like you to meet my grandson, who is here from Fresno, staffing my office for a couple of days. What he learned yesterday about the process is that Representative Roblin has the coolest office in the building. And so the stakes have been raised for me.
Further courtesies, Representative Esquivel.
Shouldn't have to use, oh, there we go. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to extend courtesies to a couple of pages we have from Southern Oregon. Teo Mulholland, would you please stand? Teo currently attends Ashland Middle School, grade 7, and her real interest is in soccer, loves to play it. Second person we have from Southern Oregon is Madeline Wallace. Madeline attends Ashland Middle School, resides in Medford. Her activities and interests include volleyball, reading, math, music, and track, and her career goal is to be a dermatologist. Thank you, and welcome.
Welcome to all of our pages. Thanks for honoring us with your presence and work today. Further courtesies. The clerk will now open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Berger. Representative Berger. Excused for business of the House, Representative Buckley and Representative Jensen. Excused, Representative Thatcher. We have a quorum. Messages from the Governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed House Bill 2157 and adopted SGR 15. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bill 65, 81, 83, 96, 125, 142, 143, 144, 151, 162, 212, 286, 53, 55, 92, 99, 100, 110, 370, 58, 59, 109, 204, 206, 244, and 172. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that signed HB 2157.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
H.J.R. 16, recognizing responsibility of Oregon in providing leadership and nation stewardship of oceans, and that the loss of research vessel Wacoma without replacement is net economic loss to Oregon. H.J.R. 17, proposes an amendment to Oregon Constitution relating to initiative petitions. H.J.R. 19, designated March 16, 2009 as Smart Reading Day and commemorating work of Start Making a Reader Today program. H.R. 1, honoring Congressman Darlene Hooley for her achievements.
Measures read for the first time or pass the speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. And colleagues, I would urge us all to be quiet in recognition of this special order of business. The clerk will read the resolution.
HCR 3, in memoriam, Brian Johnston. 1949 to 2008.
Question now rises upon final reading and adoption of HCR 3. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm humbled and awed to be standing before you today with the task of honoring Brian Johnston on what would have been his 60th birthday, and I confess I'm a little worried about whether I'm up to the task. Before I get started, and in case I fall a little short, I'd like to call attention to the presence of a number of Brian's colleagues from all of his roles, and particularly to a good portion of the five amigos known for their service together. Former Representative and current Lincoln County Commissioner Terry Thompson, former Representative, former Senator, and current member of the Employment Appeals Board Tony Corcoran, and former Representative and current State Senator Floyd Prezansky. Having said that, I think the place to start is by acknowledging that all of us are here at least in part as a result of others. We're all certainly the beneficiaries of our family's influences, but beyond that, my guess is that each of us has someone in our life who played the role of example, of role model, and mentor. We do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. Today I want to introduce you to someone you may already know, someone who's played that role for me and for many others, person whose influence on this institution, on this community, and on this state is vast and wide. Many of you already know him, but even those who don't probably feel his influence unknowingly. In 1994, I arrived in Salem as a college sophomore across the street at Willamette. I hadn't been smart enough to come here as a freshman, but I recognized that mistake and transferred. And I'd had the chance to work in campaigns and in politics and the legislature as I was growing up in Idaho, and knew that I wanted that experience here. So I started asking around the Capitol, and it wasn't long before I recognized the trend. People were talking about this candidate from South Salem who they were convinced would be a formidable legislator and an insightful mentor, and they were certainly right. I was really excited to have a chance to work with Brian, and I didn't know it at the time, but it was a real transformational experience, just as it has been for many other people. Over the next 14 years, I had a chance to work with Brian in a variety of different contexts, and campaigns, in the legislature, when he was dean and president at Willamette. And despite all of those different contexts, I'm well aware of the fact that I saw only a small portion of the ways he contributed to the state and to the world. And even though those accomplishments and contributions are significant, it's not what I'll remember him most for or what I'll miss most. That I'll miss most is his style. He was a guy who took his work very seriously, but with large help from the amigos, managed to avoid taking himself too seriously. He was a valued colleague whose opinion was sought after, who was friend to people of all political stripes. I've met plenty of people who disagreed with Brian, including notably and sometimes frequently members of his own staff, but it's very hard to find someone who disliked him or didn't respect him, and I think that's a standard to which we should all aspire. He was an unparalleled leader and teacher. The Johnston Alumni Club includes current legislators, lobbyists, staffers, business leaders, and members of just about every group you could mention. And I think his legacy remains in each of us, that if you're fighting, you're already losing, but that if you do have to fight, fight someone or something bigger than yourself. He was a kid at heart. Those who knew him well will always point to his wit and his ability to relate to people of all sorts. I remember reading someone describe his wit as something that would make you laugh for a minute and think for 10, and I think that's about right. He was uniquely capable of tempering any bad news with humor and kindness. Ask him how he was, and you could count on the answer. Those of you who know this can recite it with me. Chubby, bald, fun to be with. And because of that gregariousness, there really was no such thing as a stranger to Brian. It was nearly impossible to have a continuous conversation with him out in public because people were always interrupting to say hello, or he was always interrupting to say hello to them. He liked to say that human relationships are like bank accounts. You can't make withdrawals before you make deposits. And that's another lesson I try to remember. But his greatest gift, I think, is clearly his commitment to family. The time I knew him, I can't think of a single time he missed a family obligation, whether it was Courtney's soccer games, Zach's debate tournaments, or any of the others. He was somehow able to integrate those responsibilities with his professional obligations. And I always enjoyed it when he would talk about an upcoming date with his girlfriend, and people would wince, since they didn't know, as we did, that this is how he referred to his wonderful wife, Anne, after decades of marriage. He also referred to her as the executive director, and she was clearly both. How he did it, how he managed to craft a successful professional career and a first-rate family is something I'm still trying to understand and emulate, but there's no question that his family meant more to him than anything. Professionally, Brian served in a remarkable number of roles, and I'm tempted now to do my best impression of Obi in reading a long list. But there are a few worth mentioning. He was a lawyer, a public defender, a professional mediator, arbitrator, trainer, a law professor, founder and director of the Center for Dispute Resolution at Willamette College of Law, associate dean of the College of Law, dean of the Atkinson Graduate School of Management at Willamette, interim president of Willamette, Oregon State Representative, interim executive director of the United Way of the Mid-Willamette Valley, interim director of the Oregon Department of Human Services, and interim director of the department's Division of Children and Families. I'm sure I would exhaust my remaining 4 minutes if I tried to list all of his board and volunteer service. All that service earned him plenty of honors, and he had a ready response when some of us would tease him about maybe he ought to grow up and get a real job. His eyes would twinkle, he'd look at us and say, some people just can't keep a job. But of course it wasn't that he couldn't keep a job, it was that there wasn't enough of him to go around. The Statesman Journal had a nice editorial and called him by, I think, an appropriate nickname when they called him Mr. Fix-It. In an editorial, they said, quote, need someone to fill in as Willamette University president? Call on Brian. Need someone to give a commencement address? Call on Brian. Need someone to run a state agency? Call on Brian. Need someone to lead a school bond measure campaign? Call on Brian. And much, much more, end quote. It's probably a bit cliche, but he was a true Renaissance man. Lots of people know about his love of public service, philosophy, and politics, but fewer people, I think, know about his love for the arts. The arts that brought him to Oregon initially in the form of the Drum and Bugle Corps, and it was arts he chose as a subject when Willamette asked him to speak as part of a program called Last Lectures. I also remember him telling him that quoting Kierkegaard maybe wasn't the best idea at a town hall meeting, but that's who he was. One of those rare guys who can move from community service to comedy to Kierkegaard all in the space of a single sentence. St. Martin's University, who had just named him president, missed out on a great leader, and so too did Oregon miss out on much Brian had yet to give. As we honor a man whose title so often included the word interim, perhaps it's wise for us to remember the interim nature of life itself. Here's a guy who used the time he had to do great things, offering once again a real model for us. In the end, I think the best we can do to honor Brian is to live up to his standards. Remember what Governor McCall said, that heroes are not giant statues framed against a red sky. They're people who simply say, this is my community and it's my responsibility to make it better. Brian was a hero, and as we remember him and his contributions, I hope you'll join me in thanking his family, many of whom are here today in the side aisle, his wife Ann, his son and my chief of staff Drew, his daughter and Senate Judiciary Committee Assistant Courtney, son Zach, son John, and nephew Robert Unger. I hope you'll join me in thanking them for sharing Brian with us and with the state. I urge your vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Representative Reed, I think you said it all well. Would you like to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that HCR 3 should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. HCR 3, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. And I would invite the members of the family that Representative Reed already introduced to step forward so we can see you and thank you for sharing the life of your father and husband with us. Thank you very much. We do certainly appreciate the the sacrifices that families make to allow their spouse and parent to serve. He certainly served well. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 2626 related to energy use appropriate money, declaring an emergency. House Bill 2671 related to solid waste disposal. House Bill 2674 related to services provided by schools. House Bill 2675 related to moratorium on tree cutting. House Bill 2676 related to tobacco products. House Bill 2677 related to accessible parking. House Bill 2678 related to crime and providing for criminal sentence reduction that requires approval of a two-thirds majority. House Bill 2679 related to records of civil commitment proceedings. House Bill 2681 related to traffic control devices. House Bill 2682 related to commercial security release. House Bill 2683 related to replica firearms. House Bill 2684 related to criminal street gangs. House Bill 2685 relating to disabled persons parking placards. House Bill 2686 relating to child abuse reporting. House Bill 2687 related to receipt of monies on behalf of a minor. House Bill 2688 related to Department of Human Services. House Bill 2689 related to health insurance. House Bill 2690 relating to bicycles. House Bill 2691 relating to evidence-based programs and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2692 relating to family leave. House Bill 2693 related to school nursing services appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2694 relating to wildlife. House Bill 2695 relating to recordation of instruments and county records. House Bill 2696 relating to tax expenditures and providing for revenue raising that requires approval of 3/5 majority. House Bill 2697 relating to tax expenditures and providing for revenue raising that requires approval of 3/5 majority. House Bill 2698 relating to tax expenditures and providing for revenue raising that requires approval of 3/5 majority. House Bill 2699 relating to application of prevailing wage rates and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2700 relating to claims for property tax exemption and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2701 relating to motor vehicles. House Bill 2702 relating to prospective authority for licensed psychologists and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2703 relating to collective bargaining elections for faculty of certain universities. House Bill 2704 relating to public employee retirement and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2705 relating to vocational assistance for injured workers. House Bill 2706 relating to closure of workers' compensation claims. House Bill 2707 relating to supplemental temporary disability benefits and workers' compensation claims. House Bill 2708 relating to verification of legal status for employment and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2709 relating to collective bargaining. House Bill 2710 relating to liens claimed by long-term care facilities. House Bill 2711 11 relating to tax expenditures and providing for revenue raising that requires approval of 3/5 majority. House Bill 2712 relating to tax expenditures and providing for revenue raising that requires approval of 3/5 majority. House Bill 2713 relating to public safety officers. House Bill 2714 relating to aquatic invasive species. House Bill 2715 relating to tax deferrals for emerging businesses. House Bill 2716 relating to income tax subtractions for local government pension income. House Bill 2717 relating to whistleblowing by public employees. House Bill 2718 relating to women with veterans' health care needs and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2719 relating to school finance. House Bill 2720 relating to Oregon Innovation Fund and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2721 relating to financial administration of the tobacco settlement funds account and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2722 relating to state making a Reader Today program appropriated money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2723 related to payroll deductions for payment to labor organizations and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2724 related to dental care and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2725 related to tax incentives for use of organic matter and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2726 related to nutritional information for consumers and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2727 related to records of concealed handgun licenses. House Bill 2728 related to medical assistance and for independent foster care adolescents. House Bill 2729 related to medical assistance for pregnant women. House Bill 2730 related to pay differentials based on residency. House Bill 2731 related to pre-qualification for public contracts. House Bill 2732 related to education collaboration and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2045 relating to persons authorized to make findings of impairing for rating of injured workers' disability. House Bill 2061 relating to graduation requirements and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2065 relating to correction of erroneous material in Oregon tax law. House Bill 2106 relating to bonds for schools and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2107 relating to public borrowing and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2161 relating to central assessment for property tax purposes. House Bill 2195 relating to vocational rehabilitation provided to workers' compensation claims. House Bill 2197 relating to workers' compensation. House Bill 2210 relating to State Board of Agriculture membership. House Bill 2252 relating to telecommunications and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2259 relating to Community Action Directors of Oregon. House Bill 2273 relating to enforcement of child support obligation by suspension of privileges. House Bill 2274 relating to referral of support obligations to the Department of Revenue. House Bill 2277 relating to changes in support award when physical custody changes. House Bill 2375 relating to fireworks business and exclusive fire use zones. House Bill 2419 relating to school nutrition standards and employee areas and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2495 relating to records of state accident insurance fund corporations declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time or passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Third reading of House Bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2162 relating to property tax appeals and prescribing an effective date.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2162. Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill corrects an oversight and prior legislation. And I should tell you that as with all fixes to the tax code, this is simple but hard to explain, so I'm going to do my best. The background and correction that this action seeks to undo are as follows. Local boards of property tax appeals hear appeals of value and other issues under the ORS Chapter 309. Historically, the board clerks deliver the final board order to the appellant by posting it in the mail. The appeal period from these board orders begins on the date the order is mailed. Several sessions ago, the legislature approved an alternative delivery option by adding hand delivery as an acceptable means of getting the order to the appellant. That legislation was amended, but it failed to amend ORS 305-280 to account for the start of the appeal period when the board clerks hand deliver the final orders. 305-280 only refers to appeal period starting on the date of mailing, which means that for hand-delivered orders, there is no start date to the 30-day appeal period. This bill adds the date the order is personally delivered to the ORS so that the 30-day appeal period will trigger the time of delivery. Put simply, under current Oregon law, a final order from local board of property tax can be delivered to the appellant in two ways, by mail delivery or hand delivery. However, only one method starts the 30-day appeals period clock's running. The clock starts on the day of mailing. This means appellants who receive final orders by hand delivery have, for all intents and purposes, no time limit in which they must file their appeal. This bill simply adds the date the order is personally delivered as an additional trigger to the start of the 30-day clock. That this is not currently the law as a result of an oversight. This bill corrects that oversight and urges support. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Call, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? David Edwards votes aye. House Bill 2162, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2170, related to sex offender registration.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2170. Representative Barker. Representative Barker, could you just turn your mic toward your mouth a little bit more? Or maybe it's a shorted. Representative Barker, could you use Representative Matthews' microphone?
Yes, I could. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Colleagues, House Bill 2170 comes to you from the Committee on the Judiciary, where it passed unanimously. This bill creates a reporting requirement for sex offenders who move to Oregon and work at or attend an institution of higher learning. Under the current statute, when an offender lives in another state but attends school or works in Oregon, the person is required to register. However, there is a gap in the law so that a person who moves into the state and attends school or who gets a job at an Oregon institution of higher learning, they do not have to register. This measure addresses that discrepancy by requiring these offenders to register within 10 days of the first day of school or the 14th day of employment. Thereafter, they have to report after any change in the school attendance or employment. Colleagues, House Bill 2170 has no fiscal or revenue impact and deserves your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem votes aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? David Edwards votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2170, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2213, relating to invasive species council and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2213. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2213 puts the Oregon Invasive Species Council into the Department of Agriculture and adds two seats to the council, an ex officio seat for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and another large at-large seat to keep the relative balance of public and private entities, bringing the total number of seats to 15. The Oregon Invasive Species Council was created by the 2001 legislature and was designed to increase public awareness of invasive species and facilitate cooperation and coordination of projects. Colleagues, this passed unanimously, and I would point out that in our committee we've heard some rather disturbing news about invasive species trends, and this is something that we need to really put at the forefront of our environmental agenda in this state. We have quagga mussels and zebra mussels that originated in the Mideast and have already done their work in the Great Lakes and moved into some southwest lakes and could well be headed to waterways in Oregon at a cost of many, many millions of dollars to our hydro system if we do not get in front of that. We also are dealing with sudden oak death. Those of you from the southwest portion of the state are very familiar with this already. This is a disease moving up from Northern California and destroying tan oak and California black oak, and threatens Oregon's nursery industry, which is the largest agricultural product industry in the state. Colleagues, I encourage your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Winger, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Jefferson Smith votes aye. House Bill 2213, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will actually, the chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 2238 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Thursday, February 19th, 2009. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2256, relating to State Housing Council review of Housing and Community Services Department transactions.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2256. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2256 allows the Oregon Housing and Community Services to set a minimum threshold on loans, grants, and other awards that trigger a Housing Council review. The process follows the single-family program pattern developed in the 2005 legislature, making it administratively efficient to keep up with the changing housing environment. The bill allows the department to set the appropriate threshold for housing loans, grants, and housing funding awards, and the concept has the approval of the Oregon Housing Council. The new thresholds will be set by administrative rule, and the Oregon Housing Council will advise the department if and when the thresholds need to be adjusted. This change frees the Housing Council from review of smaller loans, grants, and other housing awards, and provides more time for the Council to discuss more important statewide housing issues. The change also reduces the trips to the legislature to adjust the threshold as housing prices increase. Colleagues, this bill passed from committee on a unanimous vote, and I urge your aye vote on House Bill 2256.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bailey, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. House Bill 2256, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2257, relating to Community Development Incentive Project Fund.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2257. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. House Bill 2257. This bill removes a redundancy in the effort to preserve affordable housing projects. Currently, affordable housing preservation projects that use the Community Development Incentive Project Fund are first reviewed by the Oregon Housing and Community Services Finance Committee, then by the Oregon State Housing Council, and lastly by the Community Development Incentive Project Fund, CIF, Advisory Board. The Community Development Incentive Project Fund Advisory Board has recognized that their review process was duplicating the review process already performed and that these specific projects were often outside of the CIF Advisory Board scope. This does not remove any oversight or review. It just simply streamlines our government. I ask for your support of this bill. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson votes aye. Representative Berger votes aye. House Bill 2257, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2258 relating to individual development accounts.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2258A. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2258 removes the urban bias in qualifying for individual development accounts, or IDAs. IDAs are designed to grow Oregon's middle class by helping people buy their first home, start a business, or pursue their education by creating a matched savings account. Eligibility for an IDA is based on income, completion of financial education classes, and depositing money each month towards the stated goal. During the last year, the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department found that current income restrictions inadvertently left individuals out of the program who were above the 80% median income level, but below the 200% of federal poverty level. This was found to occur in rural areas where the median income levels can be very low due to economic conditions. House Bill 2258 changes the definition of lower income households for the IDA program to the greater of either 80% of the area median income or 200% of the federal poverty level. The committee moved this bill unanimously, and I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. Representative Bentz, how do you vote? Bentz votes aye. House Bill 2258A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2436, relating to public programs for housing, prescribing an effective date, and providing for revenue raising that requires approval up by a 3/5 majority.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2436A. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In brief, House Bill 2436A will finish what we tried and failed to do in 2007, that is, create a dedicated ongoing revenue source to help some of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens secure safe, affordable housing. Oregon's current economic downturn has made the need for more and better affordable housing more urgent than ever. Oregon is among the 14 states with the highest rates of homelessness in the nation. Our homeless population is currently estimated at more than 13,000, and on any given night, about 3,831 children experience homelessness. Contrary to popular perception, most homeless Oregonians are families with children. In my own home county of Washington County, for instance, an estimated 86% of the homeless population falls into this category. The current economic downturn has only deepened the need for affordable housing. A recent nationwide report compiled by the Homeless Research Institute revealed that for 2005-2007, homelessness increased in Oregon overall by 8%, and in rural Oregon by over 36%. Again, in my home county, Washington County, Community Action has seen a year-over-year increase of nearly fourfold in calls for emergency rent assistance. The agency received 300 emergency rent assistance calls in January of 2008. Sadly, that number totaled 1,135 calls last month. The bill before us will provide relief for these Oregonians, notably low-income families, seniors, and people with disabilities. Modeled on legislation passed in several other states, including our neighbor to the north, House Bill 2436A will increase the existing state-imposed document recording fee from $11 to $26 to establish a general housing account. This account, to be administered by the Housing and Community Services Department, will provide an ongoing, dedicated revenue stream to increase housing opportunities for Oregonians left behind by the housing market. More specifically, this measure will leverage a current fee to create a new account dedicated to affordable multifamily housing, home ownership assistance for first-time home buyers, and emergency housing services. The account will be funded by a $15 increase to the document recording fee pertaining to deeds and mortgage records filed with county clerks, mining claims, warrants issued by the Employment Department, liens and judgment records, and the Department of Revenue will not be subject to the fee. The $15 fee will be collected by counties for deposit into specified accounts within the Housing and Community Services Department for affordable housing-related programs. If approved, this bill will raise the current state-imposed fee on certain public documents by $15 to a total of $26 per document, and the new fee will take effect 91 days after regular session adjournment or sine die. At present, House Bill 2436A is projected to generate total collections of $15 million in the 2009-11 biennium and $26.5 million in the 2011-13 biennium. The marginal increase in cost per transaction will have a profound impact on the lives of low-income Oregonians. Homelessness presents extraordinary challenges. It is a complex socioeconomic phenomenon that demands a thoughtful and permanent solution. This bill can be part of that solution and at the same time put people back to work, remodeling and building affordable housing across the state. That is why this bill is supported by a broad coalition that includes not only the 65 members of the Housing Alliance, but also the Oregon Bankers Association, the Oregon Association of Realtors, and the Oregon Home Builders Association. That said, I'm aware that some may be reluctant to support this bill because of concerns expressed by county clerks. Let me dispense with this issue as simply and dispassionately as possible. Firstly, the Oregon Association of County Clerks has taken no position on the bill, in part because it is supported by many county boards, including my own. Secondly, despite popular misconceptions, the Association of Oregon Counties is also neutral on the bill. Thirdly, the coalition partners believe clerks will have minimal work to do to collect this fee. There are no new documents to be filed and no new requirements for how clerks file documents. The existing $11 fee will increase on all but a few types of documents, so clerks will be accepting the same number of checks, just for a larger amount. The additional funds will be held at the county and transferred quarterly to the Department of Revenue in one lump sum. The Department of Revenue will then divide the funds and deposit them into the appropriate Housing and Community Services account. Lastly, this bill will have no impact on existing fees. The clerks and the counties charge other fees on document recording intended to cover their costs. These fees include a potential $5 per page charge, that is per page, not per document charge, on all documents that is paid to the county general fund. With a fee increase proposed in this bill, a two-page document would cost $46, $19.60 of which would go to the clerks and the counties. Now, over a decade of tireless work has gone into this bill, and at last, longtime advocates and their traditional opponents are united in support. Are we to risk its great benefits over a late and unavailing dispute? For our sake, as much as for the homeless, I hope not, because this measure promises not only material help, but lasting social progress. Finally, House Bill 2436A not only makes good on our moral obligation to Oregon's most vulnerable citizens, it also makes sound fiscal sense. Research suggests that the average annual public savings realized when ending an individual's homelessness is $16,282 per year. Funding the emergency housing account will allow community action agencies around the state to leverage matching federal funds through various federal programs. And recently released report from the Housing and Community Services Department finds that for every dollar of state money devoted to housing leverages an average of $11 in the private sector. A vote for this bill is a vote for putting home ownership in reach of more Oregonians and for making efficient and effective use of our tax dollars. And I urge an aye vote on House Bill 2436A.
Further discussion, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is the second in what will be a series of key bills that will grow living wage jobs here in Oregon. This bill is about housing. This bill is about jobs. Last week, we passed the stimulus bill to rebuild and strengthen our state building infrastructure. Today, we have the opportunity to rebuild our housing infrastructure. So with this vote, you can do this. You can give better housing opportunities to more working families, and you will also be able to spur more jobs for working families and help give our economy a well-needed shot in the arm. A week or so ago, I sought the advice of Mark Toma, head of the economics department at the University of Oregon, and he said that the most important determinant of whether fiscal policy will boost the local economy is the degree to which the effort limits leakage, leakage of funds from inside Oregon to states or countries outside of Oregon. In other words, fiscal policy works best if the money spent in Oregon stays in Oregon. This bill clearly meets that test, and it meets that leakage test because almost all of these housing construction projects will be built by local Oregon companies. We can feel confident that the bulk of the dollars invested here will stay here to build homes, to build jobs, to help rebuild our economy. Now, it takes a full map of the state to mark all of the communities that will benefit from the Housing Opportunities Act of 2009, from PCRI in my North Portland district to Mid-Columbia Community Action in the Dalles, down to Central Oregon's Housing Works, and out to Northeast Oregon's Housing Authority in La Grande. So I say to you, this historic legislation will help Oregonians confront the housing crisis. And I say that cash leakage to other states will be very limited, and therefore this bill, like the stimulus bill we passed last week, will help get our economy back on track through smart fiscal policy. This is a good bill for living wage jobs, colleagues. This is a good bill for housing, and I urge your aye vote on House Bill 2436. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Kenmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I urge your support of this bill, and I want to thank the advocates who have come together to make this happen. It's been interesting. Some of you know that for the last 12 years, I've been a county commissioner. And one of the great challenges in our fair county of Clackamas was trying to have special needs, affordable, and low-income housing. We had a department. We actually had 1,400 housing units that we actually took care of. But it was merely a fraction of the need. And as we had these discussions about low income, special needs, and affordable housing, we also had the reality that we lived in an urban growth boundary where the values of homes were rising dramatically, and those who did not have the income to do that were increasingly losing the ability to ever have that happen. We teamed up with a number of groups, Northwest Housing Alternatives, Clackamas Community Land Trust, and others, who came together, and we built a few projects, but not a great deal. And seeing that, we were thinking about the reality of how do you do this better, and we thought about urban renewal. What a great success that's been, for example, Clackamas Town Center or the Clackamas Industrial Area. And so we created a novel new urban renewal district, the North Clackamas Urban Renewal District, up on Johnson Creek. That's an area that is low income and frankly has had quite a difficult time across the years. Sometimes been referred to as felony flats. And we created an urban renewal district whose primary goal was to create affordable housing because we couldn't figure out how else to do it. But even with that and with some of the tools that creates, the real problem in creating affordable housing is the issue of dollars. And this is a mechanism that will put some money to help prime the pump to make it happen. I think it's a terrific idea, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, to the bill, please.
To the bill.
I'm going to quote or paraphrase, forgive me, my friend from representative from Kaiser Neuburg St. Paul, and she's not here today, but I wish she were. When we were discussing the cancer presumption bill in business and labor, she said, "I have some reservations about this bill. It's been before us for years. I think this is the best deal we can come to, and I'm going to vote aye. I will never forget those words, and they apply to a lot of things we do in this building. That's exactly what this bill represents. And I might point out there's 36 clerks or functionaries that do the same job in the state of Oregon. I only got one in Clackamas County, but I have thousands of people that can benefit from this bill. It's pretty simple. Where my vote and where my heart are, it's a good bill. I urge your aye vote. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question for the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. When closing a real estate transaction, there are often several documents that must be recorded. Is it true that the $15 increase applies to each document recorded? And so if there are four documents, this fee would increase, be a result of a $60 increase to the home buyer?
That is true. It applies to every document that falls under the purview of this bill.
Representative Springer?
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Dembrough.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 2436. As you've heard, we face a low-income housing crisis in this state. While it's a crisis for Oregonians of limited means, it affects us all in many ways. As a community college teacher for many years, I know that one of the greatest challenges that my students face term after term is finding affordable housing for themselves and their families. One reason that students fail in their courses or drop out of school entirely is that they've lost access to safe, secure, and stable housing. They find themselves moving from couch to couch or spending the night in cars, in shelters, or on the streets. House Bill 2436, the Housing Opportunities Bill, will help them keep their families intact by creating affordable, secure, low-income housing. Parents can move forward on their path to economic well-being and productive citizenry, while their children, free from the disruption of moving from school to school, will have the wherewithal to succeed in their education as well. Colleagues, another huge benefit of this bill will be its positive impact on successful recovery from drug and alcohol addiction. Just yesterday, the Human Services Committee heard extensive testimony about the enormous costs of addiction in this state, costs short-term and long-term, billions of dollars. We also learned how crucial it is that people seeking effective recovery have access to a kind of housing that's known as supportive or recovery housing, where people in recovery live in a mutually supportive setting that reinforces and sustains a clean and sober lifestyle, while still having the dignity of having their own living space. People who are living in or who have lived in such housing have success rates that are 6 to 7 times the norm. It is very, very impressive. But the funding for this kind of housing has been far too limited. The construction of these residences tends to be the product of many partnerships, public and private. Too often, though, the projects are missing that last bit of funding to move forward. Partnership dollars that will be made available through the Housing Opportunities Bill will, in many cases, be the final investment that gives these projects the green light. Colleagues, the Housing Opportunities Bill will leverage a modest investment into dignity, security, and safety for numerous low-income families, senior citizens, and people with disabilities. It'll create good family wage construction jobs all over the state. It has garnered enthusiastic support from a broad range of public and private organizations. It is timely and it is necessary. Colleagues, I urge you to support this bill.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, I would remind us, as the reader board says, that House Bill 2436A requires the approval of a 3/5 majority.
Get it close.
I'm sorry. Representative David Edwards, do you wish to close?
Briefly, Mr. Speaker. Of necessity, the homeless are absorbed in immediate wants and provisions for the passing day, in obtaining the next meal or in throwing off a pressing burden. The darkness of the present broods over coming years. For these Oregonians, this measure offers new hope. Hope in this sense means more than the simple, sunny view that everything will turn out all right. It is the practical hope that comes with a safe, affordable place to call home. Nothing and no one stands alone. We are joined by a shared origin, each existing for all and all for each. I see in this measure a chance to honor this bond, a bond more sacred, more enduring than the ties of everyday commerce. I see in this measure a social duty to respect every soul. I see in this measure a rare moment in this broken time to do more than simply prevent things from getting worse. All of us have built on foundations we did not lay, lit our path with fires we did not spark, and profited from the efforts of those we did not know. This measure is our chance to give others similar tools and opportunities to transform the great I am into the greater we are, and to stamp our state with a unifying faith and feeling. This measure presents a new way to make good on an ageless faith, and I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Thompson, how do you vote? Thompson votes aye. Representative Huffman? Huffman votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Bruhn, how do you vote? Bruhn votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger aye. Representative Kennemer? Kennemer aye. House Bill 2436A, having received the 3/5 majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 53, related to prevailing rate of wages, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 55, related to ineligibility of public works contracts, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 58, related to discriminatory practices involving real property, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 59, related to housing discrimination, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 65, related to school finance, declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 81, related to performance security of lottery contractors. Senate Bill 83, relating to devices for playing state lottery games. Senate Bill 92, related to research conducted by the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Senate Bill 96, related to terminology describing veterans. Senate Bill 99, related to conditions of probation. Senate Bill 100, related to Department of Corrections. Senate Bill 109, related to salaries of travel. Senate Bill 110 related to death benefits paid to workers' compensation claims. Senate Bill 125 related to student traffic safety education courses and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 142 related to professions regulated by the State Board of Examiners of Engineering and Land Surveying. Senate Bill 143 related to practices of engineering exemptions. Senate Bill 144 related to State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying. Senate Bill 151 related to administration of estates. Senate Bill 162 related to disclosure of information about residents of adult foster homes. Senate Bill 172 related to registration of tax practitioners. Senate Bill 204 related to construction contractor bonding. Senate Bill 206 related to persons regulated by the Construction Contractors Board. Senate Bill 212 related to administration of criminal fine assessment account funding for victims and assistance programs and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 244 related to Oregon State Bar and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 286 related to foreign country judgments. Senate Bill 370 related to limited judgments.
Bills read for the first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to call attention to members of the Land Use Committee. Our regular meeting scheduled for this afternoon at 3 o'clock has been moved to a new venue. We will be in Hearing Room 50, not Hearing Room E. The purpose for this is so that we can actually sit around a table and look at each other as we begin to work on a bill. And the bill is the one that is one of the legacies of former Speaker Minnis. It is the product of the Land Use Big Look Task Force that she appointed 4 years ago. Room 50.
Further announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A fee bill is not a fee bill is not a fee bill, and we witnessed that in the debate today. But I want to remind us, focus us if we can, that we're 37 days in and an $800 million deficit looms before us. And Friday, being the prophetic soul that I am, it's going to get worse. So, if you do the math, which somebody had to do for me, you do $6 million per day remaining in the biennium, and the severity of that ratio on Friday will get worse, and it'll get worse every day that we don't act. So on top of this $800 million that you all are painfully aware of, we're going to be even further upside down when we get ready to talk about the next biennium cycle. I think there are some simple and responsible common sense things that we can do, like releasing the Education Stability Fund, encouraging our governor to read the same papers we do and roll back these pay raises for top executives. There's money there. Instead, we're busy nickel and diming folks with fees. And I'm not just talking about the complex one that we just discussed. With apologies to the chairs of my committees, I'm going to repeat my appeal that if you don't agree with a fee or you do agree, could we not consider kind of rounding them all up and holding them for debate until we make some serious fiscal decisions in this session? April 15, May 15. There are merits in all of them. But to me, on the subject of fee bills, we have a separate ways and means process. It's kind of a shadow ways and means process. And there's a great tradition in this building of allowing people to spread out their fees in different committees and sneak them in before we have a chance to make some major fiscal decisions, like moving the 800-pound gorilla up in the schedule and voting for K through 12. I know it's not easy, but have that fight early and get that one out of the way. These are tough times, and I don't like passing on fee bills to the folks in my district, whether it's $125 more for a well or adding on what will it amount to be millions of dollars in the exchange of real estate like we did today. All of them have merits. They should all be discussed. But let's hold them in these serious times and make some fiscal decisions, tough as they may be, first, and hold the fee bills. We're 37 days in, and in just this biennium, we owe millions of dollars. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, like many of you, on occasion, I am here late at night and have the chance to talk with the people that work very hard to keep our building clean and beautiful and accessible and useful to each of us. Over the course of the last several days, it's been very exciting to see thousands of Oregonians come into this state house and claim it as their state house as they celebrated our 150th birthday and as we saw many families and children who were here yesterday. As exciting as that is, that comes with a great deal of work for the men and women who work very hard to keep this building running, to keep it clean, and to keep it orderly. I had the opportunity to have a discussion the other night with a man named Jim Casera, who's on the nighttime custodial staff. He's been here taking care of this building and each of us for 24 years. He has 6 years to retirement, at which time he plans to go to the pyramids, the Great Wall, and the Taj Mahal. I thanked him for the work that he did and his colleagues did, and I promised him that I would extend that thanks to him publicly, and I hope all of us can step up and offer a note of appreciation to all of those that work so hard to make this such a great place, but often their work goes unseen. Thank you very much.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:15 a.m. Thursday.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Thursday, February 19, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Thursday, February 19, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourn.